Well, I'm glad you brought up what you do. Welcome to the podcast, Emily Drake, podcast host, mental health clinician, and CEO. That's right. We got CEOs on a podcast of the Collective Academy. That's right. Forbes 500. I don't know why, why 500.
Someday.
Sure. Yeah, someday, right? I'm excited to have you on because you help individuals and corporations cultivate a sustainable, thriving community and workplace culture. And I really want us today to focus more on the individual, as you know, I don't have companies listening and I don't have Fortune 500 companies listening. Not that I'm aware of. Not yet. But I do have individuals who are listening in who they have a job or a career, but they definitely have a workplace where they may feel like, I don't have a voice here. I don't feel safe. I don't feel comfortable, or I don't feel engaged. Like I'm not. And so why I'm excited to have you on is because, and please correct me if I'm wrong.
You're
coming from a perspective of we can all be leaders, right? I grew up with the idea that the manager is the leader or the owner is the leader, but we ourselves have some agency, have some autonomy, and we may not have learned how to tap into it. And for me, it seems like it starts with being able to communicate. What do you say to that?
I say plus one. And in order to be able to communicate, you know, again, going back to this deck I was building, you have to know yourself, you know, and I think in my experience, I'm 44, still learning, hopefully forever learning. But here's the thing, you know, our environment is going to change, like where we are changes. You know, maybe frequently, maybe infrequently. But where I really work is at that epicenter of like when you start to change who you are because of where you are, then we've got illness starting to come in. We've got suffering coming in, right? So it all starts with communication, yes. And, you know, you got to be careful who you talk to. That's one. And two, are you in conversation with yourself, you know, about no matter where you are? So if you're working at a Fortune 500 company, if you're working at a nonprofit, if you are working in your home, you know, what are the things that don't change? Because there's so much I find in the people that I work with, a lot of the pain comes from trying to fit in. And trying to be like Leo, you know, and, you know, Leo's great. Emily's great. And it's exhausting running an operating system that's not yours, you know, like think about the tax the CPUs put out. So it is conversation and it is primarily, you know, the work that you and I do. It's your conversation with yourself. So practically speaking, what is that? It's what are your values? And then, you know, most of the people I work with are like, Jesus, this is squishy. And I'm like, I get it. I do. But let me break it down for you. Like, how do you make decisions? What are the things that are non-negotiable? You know, we don't have to like be aspirational. I always laugh when people that I work with are like, but I didn't include family as a value. I was like, it's okay. Like, what is the truth? Well, tell me about something you've done that was really hard and how you made the decision. And that's where your value is. This isn't aspirational. This is like practical stuff. So, yeah, that's a roundabout way of answering along, that I think gets us to like the individual that's listening today. Hey, you, hi, individual. Who are you? Right. And if you need to change who you are, you got to change where you are. That's most people who come to me who are in the position C-suite and otherwise who are like, I got to leave this job. And oh my God, isn't that seductive? Where you're like, if I just pull the ripcord, I'll be better. And I'm like, no, but you, you go where you go. So let's just do that part first before you leave the job.
You talked about values. And
yeah.
And a lot of times when people ask us about what we value, what we care for, we give the same sound bites. Family, as you mentioned, friends, religion, you know, it's like food, faith, football, whatever, you know, alliteration is popular, that's trending.
Yeah.
And it may not be the truth of who we are.
Mm-hmm.
Some of us value solitude.
Mm.
Some of us value, you know, I was reading in the newspaper about this woman. She lived to be 100 years old, married three times, the first two husbands for like 3 months and the last one maybe 3 years. And she was like, you know, I find marriage to be exhausting. I enjoy being with myself and working. A lot of people don't admit that, you know, they get fulfillment from themselves and from their work and don't really need to be booed up with someone else because it's not popular and people look at you like you're weird. We don't want to stand out in that way.
Yeah. Not being, but we don't want to stand out, except we do want to stand. You know, it's like that great contradiction. It's like, I just discovered, and my top value, I'll just say what it is independence. Different from solitude in some meaningful ways for me, which is like, you know, these words matter, right? So independence, I'll tell you how I know it's one of my values. Man, when someone pushes up against independence for me, I start to feel stuck and I start to panic. And independence is not recklessness, you know, right? So again, you're already hearing in me describing my own value, the judgment. What does it mean to say my top value is independence, right? People are like, oh, excuse me. Okay. But in fact, Leo, the truth is, and to your listener, like it is what it is, you know, just as it's true. It doesn't mean I can't coexist with other people. It doesn't have to be popular. These are for you, you know? And they've got to be honest. You know, my second value is authenticity, which, you know, look, I have judgment about because it's like, well, everyone's talking about authenticity. But man, if there's one thing I know about myself after all these years, it's like I can feel in my body when I make a decision that is not authentic, or when I show up with a client and it's inauthentic, or when I'm talking to you and I'm exhausted because I'm posturing and all this other stuff. So it's like, that's how I make decisions about relationships in my life. When I feel drained, when I leave, like I haven't been authentic. When I feel energized, I have, you know? So anyway, it can go, I have five that I sort of work with, but, I will say this too about it, like it not being popular, these get to change, you know, family is a value for sure. I would say if someone were to say that to me, I'd be like, tell me, like, of course, because we're therapists, but I'd be like, tell me more, right? Like, is this it? Or is it right? Like, what do you mean? Oh, I want to be present with my kids. Okay, keep talking. What are you doing when you're present with them? Oh, we're playing. I'm like, aha, aha, there it is. Are you playing in other parts of your life? Like, because that's really right. Again, back to what I said before, like agnostic of location. What are you doing? You know? Now I'm not saying you can't have family, but I would challenge that just because it is so popular, you know, like, is there more there?
It's fascinating that you said family, because for me, I would not also put family in my top three. However, yeah. You know, my mom calls me almost every day to let me know what's going on in the family. We have a family friend who has been diagnosed with cancer, stage 4. And the way my mom pitched it was as if like she was on her last days or whatever. So I was like, all right, let me make the drive. It was like maybe a 2 to 3 hour drive to go see her. She's done a lot for me. And although family is not a top three value, movement is. I really value movement. Like as soon as I wake up, I have to walk. I could walk for hours. I could just go. I need movement. And when I get home, I take a shower and then I'm ready to move again. Right. And so even though family's not a value, tell me what you think about this. We could also reframe our life through our values, meaning that in my head, instead of being like, well, I'm not going to go see our family, my cousin, because I don't value family. But I could think of it like driving from San Diego up to see her for 3 hours does check off the checklist of movement. I'd be moving from one place to the next. So, it, you know, for people who may feel stuck in their situation, it may be, it may require a reframing of the situation versus changing the situation. I see you nodding your head.
Yes, I am. I love that. It's got to, you know, I think inherent in our line of work is this, like, you know, however many, I don't remember the framework that's like ask why seven times. But I do remember when I was in treatment for anxiety and depression, you know, the modality that was part of that treatment center in many treatment centers was dialectical behavioral therapy, right? And part of that modality is, you know, and recovery from a great number of things is values, like exploring your values, right? So the way I like to think about it is you reacted to your mom calling. What's your mom's name?
Marilyn.
My mom's name is Ruth. Love these names.
Hi, Ruth.
Yeah. Hi, Marilyn. You know they're listening. Are they the only ones listening? Maybe. No, I'm teasing. You know, so Marilyn calls and it's like, okay, your values are present as you're receiving this message and all the feelings that you have. And it's like, you know, maybe who knows what values or what set of values drove you literally to see your aunt. But I think it's like, okay, you went to see your aunt. And then I'd be like, well, what else did you do that day? What else did you do that day? Right. And I bet, like you even said, I got up and I walk. Like, man, I remember when I was first, when I was in my clinical training, I had a client who's 13, worked in the foster care system. And, you know, I remember, you know, my naivete, I like sat down on a couch with him thinking something would happen, you know, like you're going to talk to me. And I was like, man, this isn't going to work. And, you know, we got outside and went for a walk. So yeah, like that honors the movement piece. I imagine too, like progress in your life, it probably looks like that's movement, right? So even in the word, it can mean so many different things. So I can already hear the individual listening being like, oh my God, this is hard. That's why I got to talk to someone, right? About it. Leo and I can help you with like narrowing it down. I had to get help to do that. I went to treatment to do that.
You know, I'm fascinated by this idea that more therapy is not conducted while walking. I don't know how we got into this whole, let's sit across from each other like it's a boxing match, me versus you.
Direct
eye contact, which we know just on a physical level raises cortisol levels. It's not.
For sure.
Right? And or, you know, you're laying down on a couch in some strange person's office with the low light. Like none of it really is conducive for feeling vulnerable and opening up on some levels. I mean, it works for a lot of people. But what we do know is movement, like, you know, that Body Keeps the Score.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so if we're talking about trauma or pain or anything that's intense in its emotional expression, it would behoove us to have that discussion as we're walking. Now, I understand privacy concerns. If you live in New York City, you're probably not going to, you know, start bawling your eyes out on Third Ave or whatever.
Sure.
And your therapist probably can't hear you because of that the haunting.
Part.
Yeah, people bumping into you and all the things. So I understand it's just, you know, more efficient and practical to be in an office.
Yeah.
But for you, it sounds like that was you adapted. You were in the moment. Can you say more about that?
So I have five core values. One is progress, right? So I just can't, it's similar to movement, it sounds like, but we have to be moving forward. My business partner and I say a lot, she taught me this, that forward is a pace. Forget fast or slow, just forward, you know, like, and did I do that today? So I remember in the room just being like, look, and this is also my own insecurity about sitting in silence, which still as a therapist, I hate. I still am not good with silence. I love how, you know, my mentors are like, it gets better. And I'm like, ooh, but that value of progress. I'm like, are we even making progress here? But I do it begrudgingly. But I remember this young man, you know, fidgeting, right? So like, he's already talking to me. He's like, I got wiggles in my body. Like I got stuff going on. And we know so much more about neurodivergence now than even in my training 10 years ago. And that's like my current area of obsession is like learning about it. Anyway, and I just was like, look, I don't think it's against the rules to go outside, which I did check. And then, yeah, we took a walk. And then the next session, we listened to music while we walked. And then, you know, we didn't get a lot of time together. I only saw him a few times, but it was that value, that driving me of like, okay, we gotta have this mean something. We gotta make some kind of progress. And even that there was, because I don't think therapy is a repository just to like process. You know, I think that's why a lot of people don't like it. That's why they hire me as a coach now, because they're like, ooh, we're gonna make progress with a coach. But I'm like, no, we're going to make progress all around. So in any case, back to your question. Yeah. Being in the moment, noticing the fidgeting, also noticing in my body, I was fidgeting and just kind of rolling with it, you know, take the risk.
Yeah. I love that you brought up process and progress, right? The process is there with the idea that we're going to make progress. And, you know, I know a lot of first timers to therapy expect overnight progress, is not, and they expect to only progress. They don't expect any relapses or going back, and you know, that could feel catastrophic for them. Mm-hmm. You have deemed yourself a recovering perfectionist.
Mm-hmm.
How has that impacted your leadership style, and how has that impacted the way that you communicate with others?
My perfectionism, oh God, I can just like feel it. Like I laugh how therapists are like, you feel it in your body, but I
where,
do it so heavy.
Where does
like,
that show up for you? In your shoulders?
Yeah, just like hunched. Because it's so heavy, it's so hard, it's impossible. When I say recover from perfectionism, what I mean is it's all going to come back to values, but it's how I measure my life went from external to internal. It still goes to external sometimes. I want to be clear. I like making money. I like winning business. I like affirmations, all of it, because I'm a human being. But what I realized is one thing I can't stand, reciprocity is another value. So far I've said independence, authenticity, reciprocity, progress. I cannot be in relationship with people where like the goal or the target is moving all the time. And I'm expected to anticipate that and be okay with that.
Give me an example of that, please.
Sure. So you say you want an email at a certain time with certain attachments. And I'm talking about in my corporate work, right? And I get that to you and you say something like, yeah, but now I need it to, you didn't include these attachments. And I actually want less of this. And you're like, you're not doing the work ahead of time to get clear with what you need. So you're working it out. Now, look, if you are my husband, fine, right? Because like, we're growing together. But a lot of times, you know, I think that the expectation in client services, I'm not so sure that this is with patients so much in therapy, is like, I want it a certain way. And you tell me and I do it. And then you're like, but that's not it, right? And so immediately, right, before, my perfectionism would be like, yes, got it. Okay. Mm-hmm, yep. I'm going to keep hustling to meet this moving target. And that got me really sick a couple times in my life. And so now, right, the internal compass, the value system that I live with is like, no, babe, there has to be reciprocity here. So what I need you to understand is like, this affects me, you know? So can I share that with you? And like, do we come to meet in the middle with some clarity? Or do you just want it this way without, you know, sort of giving me the benefit of the doubt? And then we've got an issue. We got to kind of talk about our relationship at that point. I shouldn't say, does that make sense? I hate when people say that, but I'm actually asking, like, what do you hear in that? Does that track?
So what I hear is, don't be nickel and diming my time. It drives me up the wall.
Okay,
So Michelle and I, we have these discussions all the time where I'm like, give me all the information up front.
Hmm.
Don't give me a third of the information or a half of it. Give me all the information so that we can then make a decision together, or so that I can be aware of how to course correct if I need to without the back and forth. Because what I hate is unnecessary back and forth. And it usually stems from, now I understand if the target moves because the situation changed.
Correct.
But if the target moved because you just did not tell me all the things, then that's where I get bothered and annoyed. Put it all in there. So it's, you know, even like when I send out the emails, typically, and I hope I did it with this. Sometimes I get lax on it, but you know, when I'm requesting someone to be a guest on the show, I say, hey, will you be a guest on the show? Here are the stipulations. Is it, you know, it's audio, the time limit. I put the time, and and sometimes I'll even include the link. I just assume. So now you have all the things, and I give you like a few options. Like, here are a few days, all the things. That way we don't have to do, hey, is it audio? No, once we get into the one word responses, that's on me, of not giving you all the information. And so that's kind of what I hear you saying, of like, you know, you don't move the target if it's something that we could have addressed in the beginning and then would have saved us time. Because now I just put all this time. That makes me feel like you don't respect the time and energy that I have. And you didn't take the time to do your due diligence to make sure that you're respecting my time and giving me all the information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I work with a lot of women leaders. I used to, when I practiced clinically, work with women who identified as like over-functioning, right? So, you know, hanging on by a thread, doing it all. And, you know, perfectionism and trying to keep all the plates spinning, right? We talk a lot about that in therapy, was killing them, right? So it's like, I believe that you can push through anything, but you shouldn't push through everything. So that's why values are important. Like, what are we really pushing through here for, right? If one of my values is being challenged, because that's life, that's where I'm going to choose to put whatever energy I've got, right? Is in maintaining my values, because if I don't, man, like we're just, it's chaos, you know, in my brain. So I think what you're saying with Michelle too, this is, you know, not a value of mine, but I know it's a value of many of my clients, is transparency, clarity. You know, these things are the foundational elements of trust.
It's so fascinating. I did not realize that transparency is such a high value of mine.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And how that's related to trust.
Oh, yeah.
Fascinating. I just wrote that down.
Yeah. You seem like you can take it, too. I mean, like, I'm also, this is a lot of, you know, Dr. Brown stuff, Brené Brown, Dare to Lead, which I work with a lot, you know, not everyone deserves your transparency. We know that, right? So she talks, as you know, about vulnerability and like, not trying to like, you know, spray that all over everybody. However, if we're going to go far, we got to be able to get there, you know? And I think at this stage in my life, it's just been really illuminating to be like, but I don't want to go far with you. So that's done, you know, and treatment and recovery and just living with myself helped me do that. You know, that perfectionism and people pleasing, it's seductive, but it was killing me slowly, you know?
I love that word, seductive.
Ugh.
Talk to me about the seduction of people pleasing.
Yeah, right? I mean, imagine it. You are the puppeteer and this is like the fantasy, right? And I pull this string and this happens. And so the seduction of people pleasing is that I have, and I'm an Enneagram type 2. My top strength on Clifton Strengths is empathy. You know, on the disc, I'm steadiness. Like I am who I am. I'm a helper. It just is, right? So, but that dark side is like, I hold these strings. I know exactly, right, how to pull them so that you're happy. And that helped me a lot in business early on, you know? And it is seductive because you get that dopamine of like, ooh, I pulled the string and this happened. Huh. Okay. You know, and I'm someone, I don't know if you're like this, Leo, but I'm someone who walks in the room and, you know, with empathy, right? Like I sense it. I got it. Clocked it. I know where people are at. That's probably why we do what we do, right? And I'm right 100, like almost 100% of the time. And I say that with humility because then the next question is like, what are you going to do with that? Right. So this is our responsibility. We have this ability. How do we use it? It's just like every Marvel superhero. But we all have that thing. So when I say seductive, it is seductive to use it for me, you know, and my advance and my gain. And, you know, I still do that, I'm sure, to this day, but I'm more mindful of, here's the downside. And I've watched most of the Marvel movies, but I don't speak superhero fluently. So if you do, correct me if I'm wrong. It's like, if you use it, the kryptonite analogy, right? Like it's also my kryptonite. So the seduction is like to use this for power. And I could say it's altruism, but it's also self-serving. And I think the maturity, or the wisdom is like, sit back, you know, work in your values, work for a greater good, deploy when necessary, this empathy, right? And just be mindful of how you affect people. What a concept, you know? That's not as sexy, and it's not as out loud, and it's not as like, ooh, I'm in control and I'm powerful. But I do sleep better, you know, like you get peace of mind because you're living in some constraints, that are part of, I think, what makes us better as a unit, you know?
Yeah. I love that you said, people pleasing is you're happy. And now I get that dopamine, right? Then with every dopamine hit, too much dopamine, too much people pleasing, then we hit that crash.
Yes.
Right? It's like eating too much sugar, having too much caffeine. And then you go, I don't have any energy today. And you don't know why it's so hard to get out of bed in the morning. Well, because you people pleased 20 times yesterday. That's like having 20 shots of espresso yesterday. Maybe you're people pleasing all day. And yeah. Now you're dopamine deficient. That's not the word I was looking for, but depleted. Mm-hmm. You're dopamine depleted because of all mm-hmm. the people pleasing. So when we think about what's zapping our energy, like you said, it's not sexy. It's not sexy to reflect. It's not sexy to sit and journal. It's not sexy to be introspective. You can't make a movie about what helps us sleep at night. We want to see mm-hmm. the person who's tossing and turning, can't sleep, gets up and, you know, takes a few pills, grabs a bottle of liquor. That's not enough. Drives to the strip club. Like, oh, now we're watching the movie. But to mm-hmm. watch someone sleep soundly. Mm-hmm. And wake up refreshed. I'm not watching that.
Right. I'm like, what? That's like, is that just ASMR? Like, what are we, like, what would it even be? What are we even looking at? Yeah, right.
You know, earlier when you talked about values, because I do want to dig a little deeper on this. You mentioned that it's one of the signals for you was feeling stuck and feeling panicked. That was a sign for you when someone was pushing up against your values. Mm-hmm. Can we dig a little bit more into that? Is that what you find for anyone? Is that also how you discovered what your five core values was? Like, what was your process for discovering that?
Yeah, thank you for asking that. That's a great question. You're good at this. My values is, and I have them on a post-it here. I also have my partner's values, just, you know, just to be like, oh, right. Sometimes it helps me when I'm like, what the fuck? And then I'm like, right, we're not the same person. Okay. Turns out, Leo, we're not, we love each other deeply, but we are not the same person. So yeah, when I came recently, these are probably within the last, within the last 2 years, what was happening is everything in my life changed. Which is a great time to reassess. And values, living in my values, this is inconvenient. It just is. Like, the convenient way is people pleasing. It's like, yeah, I'll do it. And then the meeting's over and you're like, fuck. I don't want to. That's exactly what I don't want to do. So it's inconvenient and it's slow. And it talks to me. Or my values talk to me in my body when I am, so here's the feelings that I have. It's like clenched head, shrunken shoulders, like not so much making myself small, but feeling really tight because I haven't like been myself. You know what I mean? So independence. I moved in with my partner 2 years ago and had been single for 5 years after a divorce, living on my own. He has a kid, kid's 9, kid's with us part-time. And so if we remember, listener, my top value is independence. And I was like, oh my God, how do I do this? In so many ways. And I'll just say, being a stepmom, if you're listening and you're a stepmom, there isn't necessarily a prescription, but there are a lot of people doing it. And not really talking about it, that it's hard, you know, especially if you kind of want to like do it authentically, you know? And for me, I noticed early on that I was trying to be super stepmom and do all the things and be available for all the time and tell all the jokes and say yes, 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 yes. And what wound up happening was I developed resentment. And you know, it really feels shitty when you resent a kid. It's not like resenting an adult. An adult, you're like, adults are awful. So yeah, of course they're crazy doing shyster things. But I love my stepkid. Like, I love them. And so that really had me look inward and be like, but what's the issue here? And it was like, Emily Drake, you value this and you're not creating space for it. And then here's the hard part with values. It affects other people when you live in your values, right? So like, if I need independence, what that looks like for me, Leo, is I need space in my house with no one else here to kind of listen to music really loudly. I don't, headphones are one thing, but like, I need to like feel the vibration, you know, or to have a conversation with a friend where I speak in an animated way, right? So privacy. And so what came out of realizing how resentful I was, resentment is such a teacher. You know this, I know this. I was like, this is my value. This is why this is hard for me. And so we sat down as a family. I'm really proud of us. And we actually talked about what are the values in this household as a result. And my partner, Arnie, has values. I have values. And then, you know, my stepkid is going to be their own person. So they're going to have values like in this house. And I was like, independence has to be one of them because it's my top value, right? So that's what it looks like for me to practice it. But here's the other thing and what it looks like for me to practice that I realize living in community like this is like, I'm going to need you to try and do it yourself before you ask me to do it, right? Because that's, it's not so much like, you know, I grew up with Ruth, who's still alive. My dad died 20 years ago, but like, you know, I tried everything. I was an only child too. Like I just did a lot for me. I'm not saying it was good or bad. It's just the way it was. So it's interesting, right? The value that I hold now, independence, it's got a legacy too. And I find, you know, a lot of what we value when we were kids that maybe we didn't have, we definitely didn't have the words for or the permission to be necessarily comes back, you know? And so that's how I discovered, that was my process, was like definitely honing in on, and I do this with groups that I work with too. Like, when was the last time you were pissed? You know, and you were like, here's what I used to do. Like, I'm out of here. That was sort of my behavior before. Like, I got to go take a break, but I love my people. So I actually don't want to do that. I want to stay, but how can I stay and be independent? Right. Versus leave.
I love that you brought up the and, you know, versus the either or, like either I stay and I'm resentful or I leave and I feel independent. And it's like, no, how can I stay and be independent? Right. Because I know for a lot of people listening in, I mean, even for myself, I can fall into that either or type of thinking, that black and white thinking that they discuss in cognitive behavioral therapy.
Yeah.
And but you know, you excuse me, you brought up privacy and that need for privacy. And I think that some people are afraid to say that they need privacy out of a fear of like they're doing something secretive. But I feel like there's a difference between privacy, needing privacy, and being secretive, right? Like secretive to me is like you're doing something that you know you shouldn't be doing, that or that would upset me, or that could be disastrous or embarrassing, and you're hiding it, versus privacy of like I need time alone to recharge and collect my thoughts and journal or listen to loud music. Can you say more to that?
Yeah. For me, when I hear, thank you for bringing that up. That's right. I mean, I hear shame with secrets, right? You know, there's something inherently bad about this versus like something I've learned, you know, being in, you know, being with the love of my life, you know, which is what a gift, and sharing my life with a young person, even they, and especially my partner, doesn't need to know everything about me. And I used to be, Leo, that person who's like, let me, like, as you can tell, I can talk. I mean, I'll tell you things. So I had to learn I really had to learn like what is for me and what is for us, you know? And I think I led my life with like, it's all for us, you know? And that, that allows me to escape some of the responsibility of what is mine, you know, to manage or to think through. And so privacy allows me to explore that unencumbered, you know, that my side of the street, and then disclose as I need to. But it turns out not everyone needs to know everything I'm thinking, you know? Listener, are you listening to me? Not everyone needs to know.
Well, we have to keep that mystique in the relationship, that we have to remain seductive also, right? Like, what is she doing? Why does she have a glow all of a sudden? Oh, she's wearing something a little different. Ooh, what's happening? Right.
Yeah.
The seduction of tapping into ourselves. I remember watching, I forget if it was a movie or a series, but husband and wife, they've been married for 20 years, 30 years. Mm-hmm. And they're at that point where they're not touching each other.
Mm-hmm.
And, and the wife, she's up late one night on some chat. And she's talking to some guy and there's some flirtation going on. Mm-hmm. And so she's really like aroused by the conversation, the chat conversation, comes back to bed. And then the husband's looking at her like, "Woo, who is this woman in bed?" Cause now she has a little glow about her and she's moving a little differently. And so they end up, you know, physically connecting and being intimate, but you know, nothing changed really about her except that she changed. There was a change in how she felt. Mm-hmm. Right. And yes, it came from an external source, but the point is that we can tap into that source in so many different ways. And privacy is one of those ways, or music, or creating something. Like, it doesn't have to be, you know, emotional infidelity is what I'm saying. And so a lot of people, we're so limited in what we think our options are into tapping into who we are and expanding ourselves.
I think there's nothing sexier than, I mean, I was going to say self-efficacy, which is, you know, yes. And I'll also say having people in your life who are working toward their thing, you know, and like, maybe it has an effect. Of course, it'll have an effect on other people, but I'm not saying like the selfish pursuit of whatever, but having your thing.
You know, I've read somewhere that you refer to life as a spiral staircase.
Oh, yeah.
Can you illuminate?
Not original thinking. I'm looking, listener, I'm looking at my bookshelf to be like, there is literally a book called The Spiral Staircase. It's also part of, I mean, you know, stuff I learned in graduate school, but hopefully we'll cite that later. So Google it, The Spiral Staircase. It's written by, if I believe, so I think it's written by a nun. All right. How I think about it, this is my own humility. It's like, we're walking along in life. Back to your point right at the jump of the episode where you're like, when we're healing and then we're shocked when we take a step back, or, you know, that relapse comes. Or so I remember getting introduced to this metaphor in therapy with my own therapist, probably three therapists ago. I haven't changed therapists that often, but like, you know, sometimes you have to change. It's okay. I think about it as like, I am who I am, which means I've got these values I live with. I've got a lot I offer the world, and the things I'm working on are the things I'm working on. And so I'm going to be working on those potentially for who knows how long. And it's all the usual stuff that everyone else is struggling with. Nothing too remarkable, but what's changing. So that's it's the view when I come up the staircase, right? Before I know it, I'm actually moving up. Right? I'm making progress, but the view might look the same. You know, it's like, oh my God, this building again, you know, but it's like, yeah, but you're on the 32nd floor now. You were on the second floor. So I like to think about it as like, it's also, you know, speaking to what you were also saying, like none of this shit's linear. And that's why I think about forward as our pace. So as long as I'm like walking up the stairs, I'm not going back down, like walking up the stairs, it's okay that I come up to the same things again. And I get to do that dance with new people, you know, and hopefully the knot that it can used to put me in is looser, right? And it begins to sort of like, yeah, I can bounce back. That resiliency is there, you know, like The View, you start to laugh about it because you're like, of course this is coming up. Of course, you know? So that's what when I think about life and I think about a spiral staircase, it's still pretty great because like eventually you get to maybe like see the clouds and like really your view does change, but you still have the same stuff in focus, you know. I don't know, that's how I think about it.
Yeah, I love that idea of the spiral staircase because mm-hmm. Like you said, it is the same thing but from a different view,
right?
It's am I at the bottom of the mountain or am I at the top of the mountain? It's still the same mountain. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to appreciate it differently depending on the effort I put in it. And I think that's what's key, is that there's a different appreciation for what we see before us if there's effort that's been put in, right? Am I at the bottom of the staircase or am I at the top? Because I'm gonna, you know, now there's a sense of accomplishment, right? That's self-efficacy.
Sexy.
Yeah, it's real sexy. I got the little glisten. I'm sweating a little bit, releasing some pheromones. Oh, it's about to go down. Might go down on a spiral staircase.
We don't know.
We don't
That's
know.
A movie. That's a movie for sure. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Book adaptation. I see it. The Nun would be thrilled. I hope I'm not speaking out of turn. But anyway, in religion.
Beautiful. Beautiful. I know we got to wrap up here. But,
yeah.
I also read that you had a positive experience with your divorce. Can you briefly highlight that?
Sure. Yeah. Oh, what do I want to say about that? I got divorced as a result of two people who like each other growing apart. And so it was a long-ish, sort of slow, quiet separation that, when I told my ex-husband, I was like, I think this is done. There wasn't a fight, you know? I had already fought like to try, and it's exhausting. And so he and I, you know, walked away from each other. And just last week I texted him to ask for something. I don't talk to him very much. But I do think this is not a movie. Again, our divorce is not a movie. It's the slow, quiet drifting that dissolves, kind of like the Ken Burns effect, right? Like just fades. And you're like, okay, you know? And I, in some ways, right, I feel like that ending, and I think about this for a listener who might be thinking about like leaving anything. You know, like nothing happened. So how do you decide to leave? It's, you know how you decide to leave? Oh my God, full circle moment. Those values, man. Like that's how, because it's not a whiz bang like fireworks moment. It's the end, you know.
It's the end of the world as we know it. I think it's the world.
Yeah, and I feel fine. Sure. Yeah, right. And
Emily, if someone wants to reach out to you and work with you,
yeah,
who is you know, what is your clientele like? Why would somebody want to reach out to Emily Drake?
I love it. Well, most people are reaching out to me because they want to hire me to work in their organization. So if you want to see what I do in the world of the Fortune 500, baby, and others, you can check me out on LinkedIn. It's probably the best place to go. Emily Drake, I'm right there. You can see samples of our work. You can look at my business, you can look at my podcast, et cetera. If you just want to vibe with me on, like, you know, what I'm into and what I'm thinking about and, you know, like in an individual way, I'm on IG at emdrake. But I'm Googleable. I mean, you just find me. You know what I mean? I'm not trying to be mysterious.
Yeah, you're not trying to be secretive.
No, not really. And look, right? Isn't that, I don't know what your presence is like, but I'm always thinking about, like, is this too much, too little, too much? I don't know. I don't have any wisdom to share on that, but that you can find me. You can find me. LinkedIn and IG are the best spots, I think.
I love it. And then, yeah. Penultimate question. That's my new favorite word, penultimate.
Yeah, it's good.
Thank you, Amy Neatfield. I always imagine there's one person listening in who may be on the precipice of wanting to end their life. Before you kill yourself, what would you say to them, Emily?
Before you kill yourself, can you tell one person that you're thinking about killing yourself? And let go of some of, if you're feeling shame about it, we might not even talk you out of it, right? Like we just want to know. And you'd be surprised how many people have thought about it too. Myself included, a couple times in my life. So tell one person.
And then last question, what are you looking forward to in the next 24 hours?
Oh my gosh. Well, we received the kid tonight for our custodial time, and which is like, I know it's like Lily's for our time together. Tonight's pasta night, man. Every Wednesday. So I'm excited for, they have swimming lessons. I'm excited to hear how those go. I'm excited to make pasta tonight. It's like the day we receive them. So I'm like, I'm pretty excited about that. I got to be honest. And I was really excited for this podcast. So it was better than I thought it would. I mean, I didn't really think about it, but it was great. It was great. Let me just say that. It's not better than anything. It was great. Thank you for having me. Did you wear the Chicago Bears for me?
Oh, I'm from Chicago.
Out. How did you not lead with that?
Well, I'm
in Chicago.
Well, you know what? And I saw that, but there's so many fascinating elements to your story, Emily.
Okay.
That, to be honest, an hour is not enough.
Okay. Fair enough. Yes.
I mean, we didn't get into your childhood growing up, like none of that, there's, I feel like we had a whole book's worth of conversation just in knowledge and stuff.
Fair enough.
But that also was a good reason to have you back.
Okay.
Right.
There's more
of this onion appeal.
Yeah. I love it. I just want you to know I noticed. Okay.
Emily, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Remember, this podcast is not a substitute for you calling the 988 or any of the 800 numbers listed in all the show notes. You can chat, call, or text. If you want one-on-one coaching, go to thrivewithleo.com for one-on-one coaching with yours truly. Let's get to tomorrow together. Thank you, Emily.
Thank you, Leo.